Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's on show is Evan Seger and my co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSeger. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, for our Locked On Suns page, you are already at Locked On PHX Suns. Just Twitter, very much appreciate it, as always. If you guys do follow our Twitter account, you will notice we actually have a new logo now. So it looks pretty nice, Brendan. I must
pretty
say.
Snazzy purple. Yeah, it's better, I mean, in my opinion, than the Sun City jerseys. So. I mean, we have that going for us.
That's actually a really good point. I like that. And we might as well just get into the hot topics from today because, boy, for an off day, Brendan, this is a pretty crazy day news-wise for the Phoenix Suns, full of drama and full of back-and-forth conversation, denying one source, denying another source. And first off, we're going to hit it with Adrian Wojnarowski. This was released late last night, and we picked up this morning as we were all sleeping during Phoenix time. But Adrian Wojnarowski said in a video report on the Woj Report that's on ESPN's YouTube page, the Phoenix Suns are "quote unquote" a concern for the NBA, and according to Adrian Wojnarowski, James Jones and his scouting department barely scout any draft prospects. They usually stay back and watch just videotapes of them. So, any initial thoughts of that? Because it seems like he went on to also pretty much just say that Sarver hasn't learned any lessons in the past with his issues. It just screams of Wojnarowski pretty much sending a signal up too that the NBA is actually starting to notice how dysfunctional it's going to become.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder. I mean, whenever we'll get into the consequent reporting and then James Jones' appearance on 98.7, it was just a coincidence. Funny day for it to come out from Woj, because Jones is on the radio every Wednesday anyway, so it was a little bit serendipitous there, but we'll get into all of that. It starts to kind of, the immediate thing, at least that I do, at least that you and I were debating back and forth about a little bit, is kind of, where's this coming from? Where's the sourcing coming from? And obviously Gambo has historically been super plugged in with the Suns, and so you want to trust what he says. Obviously Jones was speaking on the record on the radio as well, and Woj has a little bit of a disconnect. I think that's just the reality. He's not a local reporter, and so his information is going to be maybe secondhand. You never quite know exactly where it's coming from, so I think that's kind of where I started to go. But what I'm saying here is I think maybe that he mentioned the league office specifically. So to me, it's like, maybe that's where this is coming from. I think that's something you have to think about, is for him to feel confident enough to raise this issue, report this kind of burbling storyline, is maybe it's coming from the league itself. Maybe he's talked to people up top in the NBA that are starting to take notice of just how bad things have gone here, and whether there's anything that can be done or anything that will be done going forward.
Let me ask you this, because it seems like if they sometime were to step in, not just that they will anytime soon, but with the ownership here with Robert Sarver, if the NBA did decide to step in on that, that would be a historical feat, I think, because I don't think that's really ever happened in the NBA outside just like a scandal or a moving situation or anything like that. Just based off of this like losing atmosphere, I don't think that's ever happened before, has it?
Well, I mean, the 76ers is the easy one with Hinkie, but I looked it up just to kind of use that comparison point, because it's obviously the only one I can remember in recent history. And Brian Windhorst wrote up something about kind of after Colangelo had already been hired as an advisor, Jerry Colangelo, by the 76ers as an advisor to ownership was his official role at first. And then, of course, he went on to hire his son as a general manager and all the chaos that ensued with Brian Colangelo's being fired last year. But anyway, before all that, the real reason wasn't even losing. The Sixers were historically bad, far worse than the Suns have been even over this two-year stretch. They did it for basically four seasons, and the lows were much lower. But here's the quote that I thought kind of put it into perspective the most. So Windhorst wrote in 2015, owners routinely complained about the economic drag the 76ers were inflicting on the league as the revenues of one of the largest market teams, a franchise expected to contribute more robustly to league revenue sharing, sagged. For many teams, games featuring the starless and woeful 76ers as the visiting team have been the lowest attended of the season, sources said. Last year, the 76ers fought a proposal against reforming the NBA lottery rules because it would have disrupted their rebuilding plan, which is a transparent attempt to gain the highest draft picks possible. Blah, 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 the process, in other words, as people are probably pretty familiar with. So it was the blatant nature of it, as well as the fact that it's Philadelphia, which is a bigger city than Phoenix, historically more successful basketball franchise than the Suns. So I think it's those two combined things that really put their situation over the top, and I don't think we're there yet with the Suns.
What's different, though, from Philadelphia, which I've seen brought up a couple times on Twitter in the past few hours, is that the Sam Hinkie process thing was his doing, but he was also he wasn't the owner, though. Is that a different situation, though?
When yeah, for sure.
Like, just running.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up, too. You're right.
And I guess I should go a little bit ahead here and talk about the quotes. We'll just go right through here with Wojnarowski. He said, "This is an organization that's going to aspire in almost every way. It's a concern for the NBA. Owner Robert Sarver has seemed to not learn a lot of lessons through the years about his management style, his hands-on nature, and his ability to put an infrastructure in place and allow it to build an organization. Right now, James Jones is his interim general manager. He's a couple of years retired from the NBA. Jones has had a rather unorthodox view towards the NBA draft. There's not a lot of scouting going on in Phoenix. He's not on the road a lot." So, it just, like I said at the top of the podcast, Brian, it just seems like, from an outside perspective looking in, we're obviously not in the front office. We're not around them daily as far as, like, being inside the operation, stuff like that. It seems like, just from an outside looking in, they're painting a picture that this is, the organization out of all 30 NBA teams that's probably the lowest suffering right now as far as just, like, dysfunctional things going.
I think it's the one that's the worst run as things currently stand. I mean, they're just getting run over. I mean, in this case, I think the on-court product does show how much of a disaster it's been. The Sixers situation was a little bit different because they weren't even trying to put together an on-court product that worked. This is almost, in some ways, a little bit worse because it's such a gross failure to even know. You know, they're trying, I guess, to do it, to win, to put together a real NBA team, which those Philadelphia teams weren't. So this is the failure of Sarver to put people in place, as Wojnarowski said, that are going to be able to actually do their job and create a team and successfully run the franchise. That's, I think, more egregious to me as far as an indictment of the owner than what, like you said, the Hinkie thing was. That, I mean, that was his plan. Whether it went over well or should have been able to last as long as it did or any of the other questions, I think that's up for debate. But they actually did what Woj is saying the NBA is taking notice that Sarver is unable to do, which is hire somebody and let them go to work. So the other quote that I think makes me kind of raise my eyebrows a little bit is, "There's no question from the league office, teams around the league, there's a lot of raised eyebrows at Phoenix about how they're operating right now. This is another crossroads for Robert Sarver to figure out how to get this from a state of disrepair back on the path of relevancy, perhaps even before they consider the idea of becoming contenders again." That's, I mean, I think it's pretty damning. I mean, I don't remember a time in recent history in any sport where the biggest reporter was publicly saying that the league itself was worried about how much damage that person was doing to the franchise that they own.
I feel like the only situation I remember that might have been like that, I could be really wrong though, because I was a little bit too young for this, but remember the Maloofs in Sacramento?
Yeah, that's true. And the Dodgers owners too, that was another one.
Yeah, for sure. And another thing, as far as this report goes, I mean, there's so much we can talk about here, but another thing that I wanted to hit on that we talked about, I think, a week or two ago on this podcast, is that how attractive this is going to be for anyone, coaching candidates, players, front office executives. Now with this report, Brian, I mean, it's not the nail in the coffin, but I mean, you're going to have a really rough time now as far as trying to get any sort of competent or at least high-level talent here on all levels.
Agreed, and I think that's where it really comes into perspective, the difference here between the Philadelphia situation or even others in the past is of just losing and being bad. This is different because, as you mentioned, as we keep hitting on, it's the owner, so that's going to be your boss. Anyone looking at this job outside of the very low-level people that we've seen Sarver hire to kind of be his yes men and, you know, just say thank you for the opportunity and do what's necessary to keep the job. Outside of that level of guy, which I think is a complete risk, as we saw with Ryan McDonough, as we're seeing with James Jones, as we're seeing even with Igor Kokoschkov and Earl Watson, everybody that's been in charge here for years now has been unable to do it because they're just really not ready, I think, in a lot of situations. So the guys who are ready, the guys who would probably be the best candidates, I agree. I see no reason and no way that any time in the next few years they would be interested in coming here with how quickly things have dissolved. I mean, would you want, if you're a successful, if you're David Griffin, if you're Mike Zarin, if you're Gerson Rosas, all these candidates that get ballyhooed every time these openings come up, would you want to work for Robert Sarver? No way.
No. Yeah, it's especially when you look at it, Brent, and ever since Steve Kerr and Mike D'Antoni left, they've had, including interims, by the way, seven head coaches and now three, possibly four GMs. They replaced James Jones in the past 9 years. That is so much turnover on so much important levels in an organization too many times.
For sure. It's I think it's the most unstable and poorly run in basketball, at the very least. I mean, James Dolan has a claim to that, but the Knicks seem to be on the path back to something right now. They seem pretty sturdy on getting Kevin Durant. So, I mean, that's the Suns' only competition here, I think. The Cavs have a pretty renowned owner for being pretty terrible, but they won a championship 3 years ago. So I think the Suns are toiling at the bottom pretty clearly right now.
Yeah, that's definitely for sure. And one more point I wanted to hit on too. I was just doing some fun. This wasn't included in my story, but the Kings have not made the playoffs in about 12 years, something like that. The Suns have made, it's going to be 9 years now of the playoffs. Their win percentage over that time period since Kerr has left, Steve Kerr as the GM of the Suns, the Kings and Suns are only separated by 1%, 37.8% to 30.6%. So that kind of tells you a lot about how it's going right now for the Phoenix Suns. But another thing I want to hit on too with this is the part that Woj said about the president of basketball operations. I include this in my story, Brandon, because I remember this was what Woj said back when they initially fired Ryan McDonough. But here's the initial quote from today that I'll hit on before I go into that. I'm told that Robert Sarver is considering the idea of hiring a president of basketball operations that would perhaps oversee James Jones. Hasn't started on interviewing candidates for that yet, but certainly is in consideration, probably a pathway to at least get somebody in Phoenix with experience. The resume of running an NBA organization, running it successfully. So I included Kevin McHale in there. I'm not saying McHale is a good executive, because, I mean, he did not do well for the Timberwolves, I don't think. I mean, they never did anything in the playoffs or anything like that. Kevin Garnett, they kind of wasted away his prime. But I included that tweet in there from Woj back in October because it's in that breadcrumbs are already kind of getting laid for Kevin McHale, a guy who has NBA experience, a guy who has run an NBA organization, kind of fits all these boxes that Woj is talking about here. He's also, I believe, connected to Robert Sarver, and I think they might be friends. And I'm not confirmed on that, though, but they seem to be connected from the past. He makes a lot of sense in that. I mean, we could talk now about possible president basketball operations candidates, but that's the one I'm circling back to right now.
I completely agree. I mean, I think that kind of goes into the next thing I want to talk to. Do you want to just take a break here and get back with the GM and president kind of searches that seem to be underway?
Yeah, might as well. And before we do that, guys, I wanted to tell you really quickly about our Locked On NBA Twitter account. If you're not already doing so, go and follow Locked On NBA now on Twitter. You're going to have the best voice around NBA Twitter, in my opinion. You have not only Brent and I and Phoenix giving you the best Phoenix Suns coverage around, but also so much really great voice around that work in Houston and Denver and Boston, Indiana. We have all 30 NBA teams covered. So if you guys want to get a national taste, a national scope of everything NBA, go on full out Locked On NBA now on Twitter for everything going on there.
Before we get into the search for general manager of the Suns that apparently started conveniently right as these reports came out, I want to tell you guys about Homie. And I'm going to be honest, like, I think about buying a house and kind of moving on to that part of my life, and it's pretty terrifying. And I think I'm definitely not the only one. Even having the money to do it, even having the familiarity is not always enough. It's an intimidating process. It's something that is hard, and you can get kind of nickeled and dimed if you're not careful, if you don't have the right people supporting you. And so Homie is an excellent service that I think really checks a lot of those boxes. You've been hearing me tell you about them for quite a while, but it's something that I really am excited about. It costs just $1,500, $199 to list, and $1,299 at close to sell your price with to sell your home with Homie. And that means that on average, any Homie customer is going to save over $10,000. They also have a team of realtors and attorneys to help you qualify for a loan to make the process of buying your dream home even easier, and on the back end, help you qualify for up to a $5,000 buyer refund. So it's really about making this process less intimidating, less stressful, less costly, and less overwhelming. To learn more about my friends at Homie, text Homie, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Again, take out your phone, open up that texting app, and text Homie, H-O-M-I-E, to 88588. Alrighty, what did you think about the immediate kind of recovery by the Suns organization here today after Woj comes out with those pretty damning reports that suddenly, out of thin air, the general manager search is on?
It's interesting because very, like you said, very conveniently timed with that. And also, James Jones, who was on the radio, like we hinted at today with Burns and Gamble on 98.7 FM, he came out immediately. They asked him right away about the Woj report, and he said, Woj's not in the building. I don't talk to Woj. He does not know what's going on in this organization. He pretty much denied everything that Woj said in the report. I mean, he didn't deny everything, but he pretty much clapped back at him saying he doesn't know what he's talking about. So that's just another wrinkle to this that I think is interesting because it's not damage control, but it's just something that is interesting to do right after that report comes out.
Yeah, it's funny to me. I mean, not funny, but it's silly to me that Jones could actually think after so many years in the NBA that him not personally talking to Woj means that, like, that's just not a great way to calm down the fans who are worried about turmoil to say, I didn't personally tell Woj this, therefore it's not true. It's like, well, there's a lot of people that work for the Suns. There's a lot of people that work for other teams. There's agents of general manager candidates or any number of people who would have at least caught wind of this over the years, over even just this year, and would be able to tell Woj with pretty good certainty how badly things are going. So I personally was not impressed with that quote to really stamp everything out. It did not work. So it was pretty crazy to me, to be honest with you. And if we have any photographers listening, can we get some more pictures of James Jones, by the way? I noticed you use this picture, and we've had to use like the same four pictures on Brightside all year because there's no pictures of this guy. But anyway, hopefully that changes if he's made the full-time general manager. But did this change anything for you as far as how likely you think it is that it is Jones? I mean, we talked pretty in depth over the All-Star break about feeling pretty confident that it was going to be Jones, and now there's this search that's being made so much of. Does that change anything for you, or do you think it's just going to be this thing where we talk it up and then in 2 weeks or at the end of the season, it's, oh, and we've settled on Jones?
Oh, that's definitely what I was going to say, Brent. I feel like this is not air quoting the search, but I feel like this is just going to be James Jones going to be named a general manager here in April, because the way he's been talking to the media, especially us on Brightside, and we'll get to that in a few minutes here about his draft comments, but it just is interesting to me. If you have a guy run the organization pretty much an entire season, let him lay the groundwork, let him make whatever moves he wants to, like Kelly Oubre or Tyler Johnson. I think it sounds like, I mean, from what he's been talking about Burns and Gamble recently this month, it seemed like that was his decision to go after Tyler Johnson. It wasn't like a starter move there. So you're having this guy make these moves for you. That's really impacts your cap space for 2019 already. So you're making these detrimental moves possibly if he's a guy that's let go. I mean, it has to be James Jones at this point. But you're letting him make moves and you're letting him really build the roster already. And I just don't see how this report changes anything.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think it really does. And I think, you know, if there was going to be a legitimate search, it could have been happening already. If there was going to be a search, we were talking like how it was puzzling to us that, or at least something that gave us some degree of hesitancy about whether it would be Jones, ultimately was just why has he not been named the general manager yet, if that's the intention here. And I think you could even say the flip side, if there was going to be a search, why would that not have been announced yet? I think that almost is more convincing to me of the opposite, which is just that there was never going to be a real search. And this even of in and of itself is just saving face here when the franchise started to take some heat. But some of the other stuff that I thought was interesting, as you mentioned, the draft stuff, but why don't we, to stay kind of in the front office quote ball game here, what did you think of Gambo saying that he felt as if this summer before the draft several positions were going to be added in addition to the ones that were never filled when McDonough was fired?
It's interesting to me. I mean, I don't really know what positions he's talking about. I know scouting is what they need, but
Yeah, I mean, maybe not like new positions added, but he basically just said like there will be a lot of people hired and filling the old roles and new faces.
It just seems like, Brent, I mean, to be honest, if Sarver or the front office and the Phoenix Suns wanted to change up things as far as a GM search, they would have done this the day after Raymond Dennis was fired. A search would have been conducted then and there. If it's just now happening 5 months after that, after the fact, I don't really think there really is a search. And like you're saying, Brent, I feel like, honestly, James Jones probably already has guys in mind he's going to hire after the season ends.
Yeah, what do you think that looks like? That was going to be my next thing here is we don't know. We obviously don't know what kinds of guys Jones even has his eye on, what direction he'll trend, if he'll do people he has a relationship with, if he really seems to be leaning quite a bit on Trevor Buckstein and Jake Luz of the head of the analytics department, who people will know from the broadcasts and everything. But how do you think this thing goes? Do you think it's going to be, I mean, I think we know they have to hire people, but is it going to be a retread of the Watson, Kokoschkov, McDonough, James Jones tree of first-time people who we have no reason to trust? Or do you think that we could actually see some real difference makers brought in, people that maybe we don't know their names because these aren't going to be guys that we've ever heard of, but people who actually bring some clout and some experience?
I feel like it's going to be a little bit of both, to be honest. I feel like a guy like a Kevin McHale, a guy like a David Griffin, I feel like one of those guys would be hired as a president of basketball operations, someone in that kind of vacancy that has that kind of clout. Both those guys are on TV all the time with TNT and NBA TV. So those, and they've also obviously had NBA basketball operations experience. So
yeah, if McHale's TV analyst stuff is any indication, I think I'm good. I think I'm all right without him running the Suns, but he's a respected guy. I'm giving him crap. I don't think any of that players only stuff is good, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, cancel players only, please, because that's not
for real.
Yeah, it's not fun. But thinking more about, I think there's a curveball. I've been thinking about this in the back of my head. I'm gonna save it for when the end of season media stuff happens. But I feel like Jamal Crawford might retire, and then James Jones offers him a front office job.
I could see that. I definitely could see that. I think that is going to be, to a certain degree, some of the where some of these guys come from. I think it will be more trending toward the player. He's changed face on so many things, and I think we should get into the draft quotes maybe to finish things out in our last segment here. But he's changed face on a lot of things, Jones, especially even just within this interview compared with the rest of the season. But I think one thing we do know is the relationships matter to him. The perspective that a player that he feels like he gets as a former player, I think, is super important to him. And we've already seen, I mean, he really values Crawford as a player, and he values guys who care and who kind of see eye to eye with him. I think Johnson, we're seeing that already. I think he seems like a hell of a teammate and somebody who already seems dedicated to being a leader on this team, despite really having no reason to do that. He might get waived. He might get stretched this summer. He got brought in with 20 games left, and yet he's still out there kind of rallying everybody. So I think you're kind of seeing that, and it could definitely show up in the front office. I think Crawford's definitely got to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, I think Crawford makes a lot of sense. And I don't think this is what he planned from the very beginning here, but I think maybe getting him in as a free agent, have a year in the organization, and then seeing at that possibility, if he wants to do that, I think that might make a lot of sense to go with a guy like James Jones for sure.
Yeah, I think we'll see. I mean, I think with Sarver's input, with just how things kind of go here in Phoenix, I feel like we also are likely to see some familiar names. I mean, they hired Ronnie Price, but even before that, we just always hear these guys that have connections to the franchise. I don't know if it's like that elsewhere, but it just feels so overwhelming every single time that there's an opening in Phoenix here. There's a half dozen or more names that come up purely just because they happen to play here or because they coached here or went to college here, you know? So I think that's going to be a factor. We heard Dan Marley, Jason Kidd, Grant Hill, Steve Nash, and maybe I'm forgetting some, even within the coaching search last year. So I think that'll be another thing to watch, is which guys are connected in some way that shows some sort of interest. I mean, I think Hill might be somebody along those lines. I mean, he's doing media stuff too, but has kind of lingered in the background, not somebody who took a big high-profile game analyst job or anything like that. And I think the Nash the Nash, I don't know how real they are, but I think that'll follow the Suns for as long as they keep being bad like this.
Let me ask you this before we go on our next segment here, our final segment. That's just about predictions maybe for this position. I mean, who knows if this even happens in the first place with how fluid the situation seems to be. But a president of basketball operations, like I mentioned, Kevin McHale and David Griffin, I mean, it technically is an upgrade over the GM position, I'm not mistaken. So this could be a position where you get a lot more people that want to be involved in it. But any predictions as far as Pobo goes for a spot? Because it just seems like there's not many names that will qualify, at least ones that we know about.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we'll have to wait and see the names. I would say right now, I don't think, as things currently stand, David Griffin would ever want to work here again. I mean, I don't think it's even a matter of giving him a raise or giving him, I guess, promotion, you could call it, to being the president, and he was just the general manager in Cleveland. I just think he could get a job pretty much anywhere with the work he did putting together a title contender in that market, in that city, with LeBron's drama following things around for so long. I think he could get a job pretty much anywhere right away. I think just chose not to, honestly, last summer. I would say one other name to watch, though, maybe not as a president, but maybe with a role in the front office, is Lionel Hollins. That's just off the top of my head. He played. He was obviously a coach, very, you know, fundamental, down to the basics type of guy. Led the grit and grind Grizzlies early in that stretch, and he went to ASU. So I think that's somebody to watch too.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's definitely gonna be interesting to follow what happens in the next few months.
Alrighty, let's close here with the draft, the kind of bonkers stuff that Jones said about scouting and all that, trying to save that part of the perception of this franchise. But before we do that, I want to tell you guys really quickly about the Locked On NBA show. If you aren't already checking out what those guys do Monday through Friday, definitely do so. It's keeping you up to date on everything going on across the whole entire league. Super interested to see what happens in the Western Conference playoffs. Sacramento, San Antonio, both of the LA teams all vying for the last two spots in the race. Maybe Minnesota has something to say. Mondays are local experts chiming in with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. And then all through the week, you have analysis of games, analysis of the biggest storylines, and really everything to keep you up to date and in the moment with the whole entire NBA. So if you like what you're hearing here and want a little bit of a national perspective, go subscribe to Locked On NBA. All right, I'll just give you the floor. What was the most surprising thing to you that Jones said about filling out the scouting staff, drafting, scouting this draft, etc.?
Okay, this is what really intrigued me, is that near the end of his radio hit with Burton Gambo, he just mentioned off the cuff about how important this draft was for them. He said, "I repeat, this draft is very important." You also said that in your Twitter account, by the way. So just talking about James Jones in that sense, how he said the draft's very important, Brent. If we're not mistaken, if our loyal Locked On listeners know about this, last month, with the Brightside Night, this is actually the opposite of what he said to us, wasn't it?
Pretty much. I mean, I think he... just the tone in every way, I think, that night was completely different from where he came in today. And I felt like I came out of that interview, that little talk, feeling as if the Suns were probably going to stick with what they had, try to find some veteran free agents who fit with the mindset, the culture, and the on-court stuff of this team, and kind of just build what they had. That seemed like what he was preaching, and potentially that was just having it so that not, you know, some quotes about wanting to get rid of guys or going crazy in the transaction game didn't get out, and I think he's careful of that. But I would not have told you out coming out of that night that this draft was very important at all.
No, it really doesn't make a lot of sense, Brandy. Also, I mentioned my story on Brightside, just my quick wrap up of what he said. He also off the cuff mentioned Murray State, which is ironically John Morant, the school he goes to. He also mentioned Virginia. DeAndre Hunter goes there, North Carolina. Nasir Little goes there, and also Duke, where RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson, and Cam Reddish go. So that could be just him maybe just sneakily dropping in maybe his top five or top six on his draft board there on us just randomly. But it just seems like it might not be Zion or bust, and I don't know if that's just a smokescreen right now, if just that's damage control. It's just hard to read what's going on right now, because it just seems like there's different mixed messages going on from inside the organization, outside the organization about what's going to happen with this team.
Yeah, and I think that's a big point here. And I think we talk about how Jones kind of puts on a face as if he is for sure going to be the general manager. And I agree that he does. And the way he talks about things in absolutes, in pretty specific terms, is very, just shows that the vision and the control is already his. But when he says things like this, I think you do have to wonder how much of, not how much of a plan is in place, but whether that plan is really one that makes a ton of sense and is going to be something that can be executed here in the summer. It just seems like he kind of simultaneously wants to do a lot, but is hesitant to do much of anything. So I don't know. I mean, it's just, it is tough. And I guess we probably, maybe we're not the podcast to be complaining about smoke screens when it comes to the draft.
Yeah.
For other Arizona sports fans, I think there's plenty more of that going on in the football world right now, but still it's puzzling. And the other thing he said that we have to mention, because it was probably the craziest one, he was asked about, because obviously the Woj report, as we said in the first segment here, called Jones's view and handling of the draft unorthodox. Jones responded on the radio when asked about that. It's not unconventional. We're just not out there with 12 scouts like most teams in the press box. We're sitting I can't even get through it. We're sitting closer to the floor so we get a better vantage point. We're 4 to 5 rows from the court instead of 12 to 13. And I don't want to read too much into it, but why did he bring that up first? Why is that the first thing he thought of to defend them, their methods?
I don't mean to laugh on the air right now, but it just seems like...
Yeah, it's bad.
The 7 to 8 rows make a difference?
I don't know. I mean, if they do, I guess that's going to be hot in the 2020 draft. If the Suns go out there and they draft Jarrett Culver number 2 and he's an all-star as a rookie, everybody's about to be crowding row 4 and 5 at all these college games in the 2019 season.
So here's what is confusing to me, though, Brian. I mean, Woj just saying in his report that the Suns are barely scouting, but does this mean that him saying that they don't sit in the media section, is this him saying that they're sneakily going to these games and they're not signing up for them as scouts, they're just going as a person to the game? Because scouts just don't sit in like the crowd. They sit in like the media section where we are.
Yeah, that might be what he was getting at. And I think that might be somewhat of how he was trying to defend them. Cause obviously we saw firsthand the confusion and frustration when Mike Schmitz tweeted out that the Suns were not at the Jerry Colangelo Classic. And that came up on the air today over at 98.7 as well. And the Suns actually came up to you when I was sitting up there with you watching that game, telling you, oh, no, we're here. We're up in our own press box. We just don't get put on it because we're hosting the event. So maybe that's part of it. And he also went on to say that, you know, they're really making an effort to get into these, to other team, college teams' practices and to really get to know these guys, or not meet them. Of course, they're not allowed to do that, but, you know, learn about them intimately in a off the court setting rather than just sitting up in the press box and taking notes on their game. And that does fit with what Jones, I think, what our idea of what he would kind of focus on is. But why did that come like third and fourth in his list of reasons? Why did he start with how close they are? It really came off as another example of the inexperience and unorthodox nature that Woj was talking about. I mean, I hate to just side with Woj and not give Jones the benefit of the doubt, but he had a chance to speak for himself. And I just don't know if he did enough to really convince me that it isn't unorthodox and it isn't problematic.
I agree with you. And I feel like, to be honest, Brennan, I don't know if this is against the NBA rules or not, but it just seems like if you're going to a game to scout, I mean, don't you have to like sign up for that? Like if you're,
yeah,
like
I don't know.
Like, it just seems like if every team is signing up for that and all of a sudden the Suns are just not the team that's doing that, but they're sneakily in the crowd somewhere. Like Woj said, I mean, that's unorthodox. That's really what they're doing. So
it's not untrue, I guess. I think maybe Jones supported what Woj was saying. I, as far as the rules and stuff, that is interesting because, I mean, we can laugh about it, but of course being closer would be more valuable, like, in theory. But like, if that was the case, everyone would already be doing that. That's not that creative of an idea. Let's be closer to the basketball game so we can get better perspective on it. I mean, you and I would love to sit courtside every night. That's not out of the blue. So it was pretty interesting that was what he went to immediately when asked about it.
It is really interesting. And I ask you another thing, just like, what do they have to hide? I mean, that they're not on the media list for someone, like, why they're like sitting in the, if they're not actually being listed, I don't know that or not. Maybe they are being listed at Murray State or North Carolina when they go to games, but if they're not, if they are really doing like a quote, quote, unorthodox approach with the scouting thing, I don't know what they have to hide if they're really at a North Carolina game or a Murray State game. Like, I don't think Sun Sports is going to freak out. Like, oh my goodness, they're at a John Morant's game right now. That means you're not going to trade the pick. They're at the Syracuse game. They're not going to trade the pick. I don't know what that, I mean, I might be reading too much into it there, but it just seems like it definitely is a different approach to all of that.
Yeah, it's something that begs to be read into. I mean, it's at face value, it is a little ridiculous. So I think trying to figure out what he meant is all we have left. I mean, because if we just take it at face value, it's pretty insane. But I guess we will kind of continue to track this and see if he makes it a bigger part of his public message about the summer as time goes on, and how they choose to fill out that scouting team and where the rumors go kind of from here as we really start to focus more on the draft.
Before we end today's podcast, Brian, I wanted to ask you, just as far as a media relations point of view, do you think we hear it all from Robert Sarver about this report at all this season? I don't.
That's a joke.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That's not happening. So
we haven't heard from him for almost 2 years. It's not happening now.
Wow. I forgot about that. It's almost been 2 years. Wow.
Yeah. It's been like 19 months since he hired Jones in July 2017. Right. So yeah, I mean, I think we'll hear from him when he hires Jones as a general manager. And if he announces any other of these front office hires at that time, I think he would probably do a press conference then. It would be right around exactly the 2 year mark at that point.
Wow. I did not realize it's been that long. So we've been slogging through this, Brandon. We're making our way through it. And hopefully the light's at the end of the tunnel here with this report coming out about the Suns, and we'll see what moves they make out of that. But anything else you want to hit on as far as today's podcast goes with all this news?
No, I mean, we'll see how the team reacts, see if they keep winning and get to focus on some basketball instead of this craziness.
Yeah, that's for sure, guys. So appreciate listening. And as always, went through the Woj report for you guys, talking about the Phoenix Suns, also James Jones rebuttal just a couple hours later on Birds and Gambo. So appreciate you guys listening. And as always, we'll be back with you guys tomorrow for next episode.